Coming up today at 1 on Hometown Heroes, I'll give you the scoop on an exciting new opportunity for World War II veterans here in Central California and how you can help us send them on one special sentimental journey. We'll also hear from a couple World War II veterans honored at a very unique event yesterday on the Valley's West Side. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join me today at 1 on News Talk 580 and FM 105.9, brought to you by Humana, proud to honor our hometown heroes.
As Americans, we enjoy many freedoms. Among them are the freedom to vote, to worship, and to speak our mind. These freedoms have long been protected by the men and women of our armed forces and their families that supported them. For more than 15 years, Humana has made a commitment to our veteran community. That commitment continues today with the introduction of the Humana Preventive Plus package for veterans and their families. In developing this product, we listened to more than 10,000 veterans. With their input and our 50 years of expertise in the healthcare industry, we developed an affordable dental plan that also includes discounts on vision, hearing, retail prescription drugs, and more. We are proud to offer this plan to our veterans and their families right here in Fresno and throughout the country. We are also proud to announce that Humana is now the 2012 exclusive healthcare partner for the MVETS. Find out more about the Humana Preventive Plus package for veterans. Call our Fresno office, 559-221-2522, 559-221-2522.
News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom.
Hometown Heroes is brought to you by Humana. Humana is proud to honor our hometown heroes.
Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes. We're with you every Saturday here on KMJ. Whether you catch the show on the 50,000-watt signal of News Talk 580 or on our FM station 105.9 or maybe even online anywhere around the world anytime at kmjnow.com, each week you hear veterans, primarily from the World War II generation, giving us a little taste of what it was like to put their lives on the line for our freedom. It has been such a privilege over the years to bring you these stories, to learn along with you as we listen. And one of the things I've also appreciated is the opportunity to shine a light on other efforts to honor veterans in our area. You may have heard me mention before that the show is called Hometown Heroes because of this idea that no matter where you live in Central California or anywhere else in this great country of ours, no matter where your hometown is, I guarantee you there are heroes there, men and women whose service and sacrifice secured the freedom we enjoy today. That is certainly true of Kerman, a tight-knit community of about 15,000 on the Valley's west side. And that's where I was yesterday to get a taste of a really unique and sincere event honoring veterans. We're going to talk about that, hear from a couple of the vets who were there. But first, I want you to know that Honor Flight is coming to Fresno in Central California. You're going to be subjected to a lot more of my voice on radio and TV the next couple weeks as we try to spread the word about this. But Central Valley Honor Flight will launch next week. This is something that's been going on all over the country since the World War II Memorial was completed. And since most World War II vets have never seen the World War II Memorial in our nation's capital, Honor Flight takes them to Washington, D.C. free of charge so they can experience the memorial and understand how much what they did all those years ago means to the rest of us today. Also, how their memory will be preserved and revered there forever. We're trying to bring together as many like-minded people as possible. We need veterans who want to go on this trip, potential guardians who want to go with them, and many more volunteers that'll be able to help. I'll be telling you in the weeks ahead how you can get all those applications. Tentative plans call for our first honor flight to take off in October, so that's just 5 months away. You'll hear a lot more about it between now and then. But I just couldn't keep that good news to myself today. I had to share it with you. And it's all happening with the help of the Fresno Regional Foundation, Jeffrey Scott Advertising, and Educational Employees Credit Union, EECU. I'm really thrilled about this, is taking a portion of every auto loan it makes between now and Memorial Day and contributing that to Central Valley Honor Flight. So thanks, EECU, for taking the lead. I know more of our great local businesses will be following that lead. And speaking of taking the lead, I love it when I see people honor veterans just because. you know, because they sincerely appreciate them and they want them to feel that gratitude. And that's what happens every year in Kerman, where a well-spoken World War II vet named Earl the Pearl Watson rounds up a bunch of veterans so they can get treated like royalty by a group of generous dairy farmers. Joe Porto is one of those dairymen who's been in on it from the beginning, so let's ask him. Joe, I've been on a lot of dairies in my life. They don't usually look quite like this. Red, white, and blue bunting everywhere, flags flying at every corner, military vehicles all over the place. Where did all of this come from?
Well, Paul, about 8 years ago, we've known this character by the name of Earl Watson for about 20 years. And he comes around as Kerman Farmers, and he's part of us, and he's always telling his stories, his jokes, and he's part of the group. And he finally comes up to me and said, "Hey, Joe," he said, "I'm a member of the Battle of the Bulge, and would you have an open house at your shop and have a few of us veterans and our wives to show us what you do and have something for us. So give us a reason to clean our shop." And we got it all cleaned up and set up tables and chairs and invited a few local neighbors. And Earl brought out a van full of veterans and their wives. And we had a great afternoon. And I think everybody had a good time. So the following year, we arranged it with Producer's Dairy, Bar 20 Dairy, just west of us. And they came out again. And they got a tour of that big dairy, a beautiful facility out there. And then they came back to our shop for another nice afternoon of food and a few drinks and good fellowship. Well, we had some good friends by the name of Dominic and Jackie Mendeville that attended that party, and they were touched by what we did. They said, "Joe, would you mind if we did it next year?" So they moved it to their dairy facility here on Madera Avenue and North Avenue. Well, they took their party from ankle level to over our head.
Spoken like a guy who deals with manure on a daily basis.
Yeah, we are on the north side of the dairy barns, so we're not smelling none of that good aroma. And if you ask a dairyman, that's money to them. We've got Army trucks out here. A few years ago, we had these planes fly over from the Lemoore Air Base. And we've got veterans. We've got members of American Legion out here. Dominic and Jackie do a wonderful job of decorating. And we've got a wonderful facility and good food. And hope everyone's having a good time. And the sad thing is, though, the numbers 8 years ago were probably 30 to 40. Today, we're probably down to 10 or 15 actual members of World War II. But now we have members of Korean War and Vietnam War also. But we enjoy doing this. And Dominic and Jackie, they're the ones that deserve all the credit because they do a lot of work to prepare for this thing. People like you, Paul, to give all your time and honor these people. These are great people.
You know, I think it's probably obvious to you why you do this, but maybe for our listeners, what is the motivation? Why is it so important for you and these other dairymen around here to honor the veterans the way you do? What is it that you feel they've done for you?
Well, when they're playing, when the color guard is here doing their salute and the bugle players playing, it's really touching. And these fellas here, they can barely walk. And the freedoms that we have today, we wouldn't have them without these guys. So, and all the medals that they wear, and Earl here is all decorated, nicely decorated. They gave it all. Today we're riding on their coattails, what they gave, and we're enjoying what they gave up for us. So, we honor them, and we hope Dominic and Jackie will keep this thing going, and people like Earl that. Earl works hard at organizing all this. You know, this is a one deal for us, but Earl's been working on this thing for a month. So hopefully we can keep it going and people, it takes a group. It isn't just one or two. It takes a group to make this thing work. So we thank you, Paul, for coming out here and hope to see you next year.
You bet. Well, thanks for doing what you're doing and keep it up. That's Joe Porto. And again, thanks to the Mendeville family at Green Valley Dairy, which was absolutely decked out in patriotic and military regalia yesterday for all these vets. We're going to hear from a couple of these veterans. In a bit, I'll talk to a young man who left the cotton fields of the valley's west side for the frozen European tundra in the Battle of the Bulge. But first, a familiar face with a little update. I've had the privilege of interviewing B-17 gunner and ex-prisoner of war Rudy Giannone on television and radio. We're not going to get into his whole story today. You can go back into the archives for that. But there are some new developments, so we're going to focus on that. So, Rudy, how do you do it? Every time I see you, you don't look a day older than the last time I saw you.
Well, hey, what are you going to do? I keep busy. busy all the time.
You had your 90th birthday. I was sorry I missed it. I was doing a baseball game in Albuquerque. You had a huge crowd for that. And then you decided to do something since you're 90 now that you hadn't done in over 65 years. Tell me about that.
Well, I got a gift certificate from the American Legion 509 Club to fly on a B-17 for free, which was great. And it was the best birthday present that I could have received. And it was just fantastic. They were supposed to be here on the 14th of April. And I says, you can't do it because the kids are giving me a huge birthday party. Well, they says, okay, we'll be there on Tuesday the 9th and to give the news people a ride. And you can come in up with us. And you'll be the only person up there with the news people, which was, I thought, was tremendous. As we were flying, I stood behind the pilot and watched every turn and curve that they made over Fresno. So to me, it was the most wonderful ride I've ever had. And that's the first time I'd flown in a B-17 since 1944 when I got shot down.
Yeah, you said it's the best ride you ever had. I was going to say it's a lot better than the ride you had before that. So literally, the last time you had been in a B-17 was when you got shot down and became a POW.
Yes, it was. It was June the 18th of 1944. That's when I got shot down over Germany. And I hadn't been on a B-17 since. And it was just, to me, it was just tremendous.
Being up there in that plane again, did you have those memories of June 18 coming back to you?
Sure did. It brought back a lot of memories. All I could do was think about them and more or less glory over them. And to me, it was something else. I enjoyed every minute of it, especially when I got down. All the news people got out of the plane first, and I figured they were the younger ones, got off the plane, and they waited for the old man to come out later. So when I come out of the plane, here they were all lined up with the cameras pointed toward me, and that's what happened. Then the following day, my picture was in the Fresno Bee on the front page.
And it wasn't just in the Fresno Bee. It was on the national news, on NBC News. Now, I'd had you on TV a couple times before, and the local news, KC24, did a great job with you this time. But you're on the NBC national news. Did you hear from some people who hadn't seen or heard your name in a long time?
Oh yes. I heard from people from New Jersey, Massachusetts, Arizona, state of Washington, and I'm still getting some calls from different people that I never knew that their dad or a grandfather was a pilot or a crew member aboard a B-17 that got shot down during World War II.
Who knew you could have so much excitement after you turned 90, huh?
Who knew? And I'm still having a lot of excitement right now. It's just like riding on a roller coaster, and I get awfully tired, but then I rest and I keep going.
And you've been coming out here to the Kerman Dairies for many years now. You've seen the crowd ebb and flow with who's out here. What has it meant to you over the years to have these dairy farmers take time from what's a busy and important job to honor you guys?
Well, to me, these farmers, even though I'm not sure if they're veterans or not, which I'm pretty sure that they are, but I think they do a wonderful job for the veterans in the whole area, the whole San Joaquin Valley. And I just appreciate it so much. And they're just a great bunch of people. And the food is terrific. So they're doing a great job.
So I know you just had a flight in a B-17, but that was going around Fresno. Are you ready to take a longer flight with us now that Honor Flight is coming to Fresno and go all the way to Washington, D.C. to see your memorial?
I certainly am. I want to get on board that B-17 or whatever kind of ship it's going to be and get back over there to Washington and see that memorial. I want to see it. It's great.
I know that you've been a lot of places, talking to a lot of people, and a lot of school kids. You're right down the street. You're right across the street from one of our local high schools. When you think about that generation, as you get older and older, and we're further and further away from World War II, what is it that you want them to know and remember about you guys, the World War II veterans?
I do a lot of public speaking to the schools, to the children in the schools, and they listen intently to me. You could hear a pin drop when I'm speaking to them. And I want them not to forget World War II, because that was one of the wars that helped keep this country free. And it's up to them now to help keep this country free from now on.
One more question for you. You were talking about how good the food was here today. And I'm thinking there have been some times in your life where the food you had to eat was nothing like this. When you were a prisoner in Stalag Luft 4 in Germany, do you remember what kind of stuff you had to eat then, and how desperate the times were?
Oh, I sure do. I remember out of the 11 months that I was prisoner, 8 months was in the camp at Stalag Luft 4, and the food was terrible in there, other than the Red Cross parcels that we got. But then when they put us on that forced death march, which was for 3 months, and we marched over 600 miles, then we did not have any food or water for 3 months, and that was terrible. I lost, I got down to about 100 pounds at the time, but I survived it.
And I imagine there had to be a few times during that march that you were dreaming about food and what you might eat someday. Does this feast they put on for you in Kerman kind of meet those dreams?
It certainly did. We always dreamt when we were prisoners about having a nice steak dinner or a nice big dish of ice cream and stuff like that. And here we come to Kerman and eat all this food over here, and it was just tremendous. You know, then you start thinking, I wish I had it when I was a prisoner.
And I'm guessing this whole thing kind of makes you feel like you're not forgotten and what you did was important.
Oh, what we did was very important. And as you look, you think back at that time of World War II, and it was all the teenagers of all this country and Australia and New Zealand that went to war. And we all went to war for this country, to save this country and to save the world, which we did. Not me alone, all the people in the United States. And I'm not just saying the people, the men that did the fighting. You got to understand that the people that stayed at home, the wives, did so much, and they suffered so much over here also, that they deserve a lot of credit also.
Well, thank you for everything you've done, Rudy. Is there anything else you want us to know?
Paul, I want to thank you for you doing such a wonderful job in the work that you do. And I've been with you on your programs two or three different times, and I think it's wonderful. And just keep doing the job that you're doing.
I'll keep doing it as long as you promise to go to Washington, D.C. with us.
I sure will.
And if you're listening and you're a World War II veteran, or maybe your dad or your uncle is, maybe even your mom, as Central Valley Honor Flight prepares for takeoff, the mission is clear. We want every World War II veteran who wants to go see the World War II Memorial to have that opportunity. In the weeks ahead, we'll hear from some veterans who have made that trip recently. We'll hear how meaningful it was to them. Up next, we're going to hear from an 86-year-old veteran of the Battle of the Bulge. He had a few close calls, and if he hadn't survived them, none of his 12 children, yeah, I said 12, would have ever been born. Back with more of Hometown Heroes right after this on KMJ.
With Memorial Day approaching, EECU reminds us to honor the greatest generation.
Hi, I'm Paul Leffler, and there's nothing I enjoy more than honoring our hometown heroes from the greatest generation. That's why I'm so excited that Honor Flight, a nonprofit organization that flies World War II veterans to their memorial in Washington, D.C., is coming to our valley. I'm thrilled to tell you that my friends at EECU will be giving them an incredible head start. For every qualifying auto loan between now and Memorial Day, EECU will make a $50 donation to help establish Central Valley Honor Flight. They're even offering a special rate to sweeten the deal.
Hurry in to EECU by Memorial Day to get financing as low as 1.99% APR on new and used autos. And EECU will donate $50 to Central Valley Honor Flight.
In World War II, all gave some, and some gave all. Let's come together and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.
Rates subject to change. Some restrictions apply. Federally insured by NCUA.
EECU. Smarter banking since 1934.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. The veterans you're hearing from today were part of a special event at Green Valley Dairy in Kerman yesterday. It has become an annual tradition that gets more impressive each year. Westside farmers and dairymen treating veterans to a day of appreciation. And speaking of special events, a week from tomorrow at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District building on 5th and Hughes, it's a free, I said free, Armed Forces Day concert put on by the Sounds of Freedom Band. So if you want to hear some great military music by people who really know what they're doing, next Sunday, May 19th, 2 p.m. there in Clovis, you're never going to be disappointed by the Sounds of Freedom. On Hometown Heroes, we hear the voices of freedom, if you will, listening to the individual stories of those who worked together to keep our country free. And if I'm bringing you today's program from an event in Kerman, then we should hear from a veteran who lives in Kerman, right? Time to meet 86-year-old Army veteran and survivor of the Battle of the Bulge, Jesus Armendariz, or as his friends call him, Tony. Well, first of all, is this your first time to one of these big celebrations out here in Kerman, or you been to some of the other ones?
No, this is the first one here in Kerman.
How did it make you feel to be with all these other veterans and have them celebrate you the way they did?
Great. The only word I can say is great. I'd like to see some of these people. There's not too many of us left, so it's nice, you know, especially this farmer here that made this possible, and I say thank you for that, and I'm glad I'm here.
Well, so are we. I want to take you back in time a little more than 70 years and ask you about what was happening before the war. You were born in Nevada. Do you remember where you were on December 7th, 1941, and how you heard about Pearl Harbor?
Well, that's an easy... You ever heard of Five Points?
I know Five Points well, you bet.
You do? Okay, we were living...
I'm from Las Banas. I'm a West Side guy.
Okay, we were living over on the West Side, but in a few miles west of Five Points on a ranch when Pearl Harbor was bombed.
You were about, what, 15 years old?
Something like that then. Yeah, it's been a long time, and I didn't think much of it at the time, but, you know, still, it was called a disastrous, you know, to hear about the United States being bombed.
You were out in Five Points, you're part of a farming family, farm worker family? Or
farm workers. Uh-huh. We were farm workers out there, yes.
Did you have a big family?
Yes. There was 12 of us.
Yes,
there was 12 of us. And
how many of you ended up serving in the war?
Second World War, I was the only one.
You were one of the older kids?
Yeah, I was the oldest one.
Oh, okay.
And my brother, Paul, he served Korea. Yeah, he was in Korea.
So you're 15 years old, you're out in Five Points, and you hear about Pearl Harbor, but you said you didn't think too much of it?
No, I was 15 years old. I mean, you're a farm worker, and you're busy working, and so... We didn't think too much of it, although, you know, from time to time we would see the news and see what's happening. And as it went along, it seemed like it, you know, just got worse and worse. So finally it reached the point where then I became of age, was drafted, and went into the Army.
What was life like on the West Side in the early 1940s as a farm worker?
It was hard to work, but it was a job. You lived, and, you know, you worked and to make a living. Whole families. We used to pick cotton in the cotton picking season. We didn't have no machinery back then. And then we worked the farms, farm laborers. That's what we were, in other words.
So once you got drafted and you had to leave your family, a big family, I'm sure a pretty close family, was that hard for you to do?
Well, it was hard because I'd never been away from home. I've always, you know, been close to my family. And we've always been together. I was the only one that had to leave when the time came. When I got drafted, time for me to leave and going where Uncle Sam would take me.
And he sent you to Arkansas for basic training?
Basic training, Camp Joseph T. Robinson, Arkansas.
Now, you were a farm worker, so I'm sure you were pretty strong, and you thought you were tough. Did the Army have to toughen you up at all?
Well, you know, basic training, the training, it's hard. Sure, it builds you up. Of course, you know, I was able to take it pretty well much because, you know, I had worked, you know, on the farms and made hard labor. And so it didn't bother me that much. Even this heat didn't bother me that much back then because I was used to it. So I felt sorry for a lot of young enlistees that went in there that never, you know, had any hardships. And training, infantry training, is hard.
What was the biggest challenge for you?
I don't know. I can't even define, you know, which was the biggest or the hardest. I took everything in stride. As I said, you know, had been a farm worker, used to hard work. So the training in the Army did not faze me much. And that's, you know, something that I can't say for a lot of, you know, young kids, you know, that lived in the cities and never worked in their lives. Now, those are the ones that took it hard. But people that worked out in the fields, they were used to hard work.
I've interviewed a lot of veterans from this time and from different nationalities. And what people sometimes forget about is that the military was segregated at this time. And African Americans were kept in separate units. Japanese Americans famously fought as units. And I've talked to a lot of Hispanic soldiers who have different kind of experiences. What was your experience? Did you know other Mexican-American soldiers while you were in the service?
Yes, I did. In training, we trained together, and we always got along. I mean, you know, we worked together. I mean, we trained together, and there was no... I didn't have any problems, you know, like you might say, you know, between the white people and the Mexicans. We all trained together, and we stayed together. As it came out to be, I had a buddy in the war after I left the States. He was from one of the eastern states, and he was a good buddy of mine. He was a white guy, and we got along together very well. I got along with all people.
And you ended up assigned to the 69th Infantry Division.
But when the Battle of the Bulge broke out, I was in England.
Right, and I want to get you before that, because I'm... guessing, it's just a guess, but coming from a big farm working family in the San Joaquin Valley, that you probably hadn't taken a long ocean cruise before, but you had to get across to England somehow. What was that journey from the States to England like for you?
Well, it was hard, yes. A big headache. I didn't get sick like some poor guys. That they got sick, they couldn't eat anything that they put in the stomach, they just go right out. Seasickness, you might call it. But for me, the only thing I had was a headache. Outside of that, it didn't bother me.
You're from Five Points, and I imagine you could fit the population of Five Points a few times over on the ship you went over with. What did it feel like to be on such a big ship with so many other soldiers, knowing what you guys were going to do?
Well, I never thought about it. I took orders just like everybody else. We chatted, we played around, we trained together, even on the boat, we were doing some exercise. And even after we landed in England, well, I always got along with the people.
So you're in England, and this is several months after the invasion of Europe began, but now the Battle of the Bulge rolls around, and you guys are in England as potential replacement troops, and you hear about it?
Well, we were with the 69th Division, so when the Battle of the Bulge broke out, they wanted replacements, and they took us out of the 69th Division and went as replacements, and I joined the 8th Infantry Division in Germany.
And I've had so many veterans tell me, number one rule of being in the Army, never volunteer for anything. You broke that rule, huh?
Yes, it became a joke.
Yeah.
It became a joke, don't join the Army, you know. Oh, you'll be sorry, they used to tell us.
And the Battle of the Bulge was brutal. I mean, there were more Americans killed in the Battle of the Bulge than all these recent wars that we've had combined. And the reason they need you is because all these other guys have died. So what possessed you to volunteer for that kind of treacherous duty?
Well, first of all, I went overseas with a bunch of trainees. Guys, you know, we've gone through training, green kids, 18, 19 years old. There were some veterans, some that had been on the African campaigns. I didn't know I was going to join the 8th Division.
Yeah.
They wanted volunteers, and so, in fact, see, my last name starts with an A,
yeah.
Armendariz. And usually the A's are at the top of the list, or used to be anyway, a lot of it. So they asked for volunteers, and I says, I don't have to volunteer. I says, I'll be on the list anyway. Sure enough, when they came back, and with the big list, Armendariz, I knew it. So I went along. I didn't know where I was going or nothing like that. So I just went along.
It was early January when you got there?
Yes, because I spent a month on the front lines. In fact, I have a letter that I wrote to my mother from a foxhole in Germany. And it was on the first week of January. And I was already on the on the front.
And I imagine you were dealing with temperatures you had never encountered in Five Points.
No, because the ground was frozen. You had, like I said, you know, you had about a foot of snow, 6-7 inches, some places less, places more. And we were up in the hills where they sent us. So it was cold, yes. But I endured it. I'm still here.
You sure are. And what can you tell us about what that was like? Because you're dealing with an enemy determined to destroy you. You're dealing with weather conditions that could kill you. What was the toughest thing that you found?
Well, the toughest thing was freedom. And I had a hole that I could crawl into, and that was it. I mean, that was home. See, eating was a problem. We had K rations. It wasn't like home, you know, with a hot meal, nothing like that. And I guess it's just about every soldier has probably at one time or another, if he's been at war, knows the hardship, you know, that sometimes you go through when, you know, you don't eat, you know, 3 square meals a day, and you can't eat at noontime, you know. You eat whenever you can. For me, well, because that wasn't too hard because, like I said, you know, I was a farm worker. And we ate, you know, a lot of times we didn't eat at noontime or at 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 6 or in the morning. See, so we ate whenever we could. We ate rations. That was the hard part.
What about between the meals and between crawling into that foxhole, the actual combat with the German forces there? What was that like?
Well, the German forces were across from us. See, we were up on this side of a hill facing the enemy. The enemy was way out there on the other side. There was a big, you know, like a gully. There was a stream going down the bottom of there. And the Germans were way over on that side. They would take pot shots at us sometimes. And we were on this side. So we spent a month there doing just keeping the Germans from coming through.
What were you armed with personally?
I had an M1 rifle.
How often did you fire it?
We didn't fire it often. The only time we did was when we got word, you know, that the enemy was coming through, and then that's when sometimes we'd fire a few shots. That was it. We didn't do any actual real fighting while I was for that whole month of January on the front there during the Battle of the Bulge. So.
What was being directed at you? Did they have artillery fire headed your way?
Oh yeah, that was something that we always had. The Germans, I mean, they would clobber us a lot of times. If you got out of the foxhole and you went uphill to vacate, and they saw you, well, here comes those 88 missiles coming down on you. See, so you'd have to pull up your pants and head for the hole and slide into your foxhole.
What did they sound like, those 88s?
Terrible.
Can you still hear it in your memory?
I can still hear them in my memory. Oh, yes.
What was the closest one of those came to you?
The closest ones, well, one landed, knocked up me the shrapnel right through the side here, but it didn't touch the body. Got the jacket, tore the jacket because the jacket had pockets, you know, where you put your hand in like that, on the inside. The lip of it, that's where the piece of steel went through. That was one of them.
So there was more than just one close call, and I want to take some time to explore those, but we need to catch another break first. When we come back, Tony Armandotti Sr. of Kerman tells us more about his brushes with German artillery during the Battle of the Bulge. If you want to see a picture of Tony with three of his children, head over to the Hometown Heroes section of KMJNow.com. And we'll be right back with the rest of Hometown Heroes on KMJ. A high school where 98% of graduating seniors go to college, where success on the SAT and advanced placement or AP classes outpaces almost every other school in the valley. Home to a student newspaper that hauls in national awards on an annual basis, its sports teams capture section championships. Have you figured it out yet? The school is Fresno Christian, and it's not just a high school.
Fresno Christian offers a complete K-12 curriculum delivered by supremely qualified, experienced teachers who connect with their students personally, intellectually, and spiritually. Go to FresnoChristian.com to learn more about the value of a truly Christ-centered education. And if you want to see for yourself, call 299-1695 to schedule a campus visit. Whether it's kindergarten, high school, or anywhere in between, you'll get a genuine feel for what Fresno Christian's commitment to excellence could mean for your student. That number again, 559-299-1695. Fresno Christian Schools, education with a higher purpose.
Hey, this is Paul Leffler, and if you've been listening to KMJ for any length of time, you've probably heard me wax poetic about my hometown of Las Banas at one point or another. Every city has its secrets, and I'm going to fill you in on one my old neighbors have been keeping for 40 years. No matter where you live in the valley, you probably go through Las Banas every once in a while, so next time you're cruising down the 152, pull into Ming's Restaurant. The owner, Paul Cito, has been showing off his skills in the kitchen there since 1968. He has perfected the best Mongolian beef this side of the Great Wall. Delicate rice noodles underneath tender slices of beef with a flavor I can't even put into words. Whether you prefer mild, medium, or spicy, you'll be coming back for more. Ming's is closed on Mondays, so don't say I didn't warn you. But stop in any other day and try the pork wonton soup, Chinese chicken salad, or get everyone's attention with the sizzling chicken and vegetables. The possibilities are endless, but they all have one thing in common: Ming's time-tested commitment to taking your taste buds on a thrill ride. Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in Las Banas.
With Memorial Day approaching, EECU reminds us to honor the greatest generation.
Hi, I'm Paul Leffler, and there's nothing I enjoy more than honoring our hometown heroes from the greatest generation. That's why I'm so excited that Honor Flight, a nonprofit organization that flies World War II veterans to their memorial in Washington, D.C., is coming to our valley. I'm thrilled to tell you that my friends at EECU will be giving them an incredible head start. For every qualifying auto loan between now and Memorial Day, EECU will make a $50 donation to help establish Central Valley Honor Flight. They're even offering a special rate to sweeten the deal.
Hurry in to EECU by Memorial Day to get financing as low as 1.99% APR on new and used autos. And EECU will donate $50 to Central Valley Honor Flight.
In World War II, all gave some, and some gave all. Let's come together and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.
Rate subject to change. Some restrictions apply. Federally insured by NCUA.
EECU. Smarter banking since 1934.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting with 86-year-old Jesus Tony Armendariz of Kerman, California. Caught up with him in Kerman at an annual event put on by local farmers and dairymen as a way of expressing their thanks to our veterans. That's what this program's all about, after all. And Mr. Armendariz celebrated his 19th birthday on January 17th, 1945. You know what, though? It was a little hard to celebrate because he was on the front lines of the Battle of the Bulge at that time. He was with the 8th Infantry Division, the Pathfinders, on the northern edge of that infamous battle that claimed the lives of nearly 20,000 American soldiers and saw more than twice that many wounded. Mr. Armendariz survived a few close shaves with the infamous German 88mm shells. He was just telling us about one in which shrapnel hit him on his left side but did not break the skin. Maybe we'll get more on that incident too, but that wasn't the only one, huh?
Later, I got hit by another 88 and landed close by. That one destroyed 15 bullets off of my hip. Two clips of 8 were in those two pockets on my belt. And so two of those pockets, you might say they were all destroyed because of the bullets that were left, they were bent. So you wouldn't want to put it in the rifle where you know you that your bolt action would jam, so you couldn't work it, you know.
Both of those, and this is two separate incidents of two separate 88s coming at you, and they both got close enough to hit some of your clothing or some of your armament, but they didn't wound you at all? No flesh was wounded?
No. The one that hurt the most was those two pieces that hit those two pockets, two clips of 8 bullets in each, which hit on my backside. When it hit, you know, there was a big welt all around the backside of me, and it hurt for days. The impact of it, you know, hit so hard. The clips on that M1 rifle are made out of steel. And so those pieces of shrapnel hit in between the bullets and destroyed those two clips. They didn't destroy the clip. It just hit between the bullets inside the clip. That, I guess, in a way, absorbed some of the impact. But still, you know, the impact of the whole thing still hurt.
I don't take for granted the pain that you suffered because of it, but what strikes me is that it sure could have been a whole lot worse for you.
Well, if it would have missed any of those clips, it would have gone inside me, and maybe out through my belly. See, that's the only thing about it.
So I'm not exaggerating to say an inch here or there on either one of those incidents, and you wouldn't be here sitting talking to me right now.
No.
How many children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren wouldn't be here right now because they never would have been born?
Gee, I don't know the last count. I haven't counted them.
But we're talking a lot.
Yeah, well, I got 12 kids, and they're all grown up. Uh-huh. I got 9 girls.
When you think about that and how close that was to you, do you feel, and did you feel at the time, that someone somewhere was protecting you or looking out for you somehow?
Well, I'm a Catholic, and I prayed. I done some praying. I prayed every time that I went to an attack, every time we jumped in off, as we used to call it, I prayed.
I bet your mother was praying for you back home, too, huh?
Well, yes. In fact, she sent me a prayer for soldiers, you know, in combat. And I used to try to memorize it. I never did memorize the whole thing, but when the bad time was upon me, I prayed. And when I was going into an attack, I prayed, because I knew bullets would be coming my way.
It's funny you mention that, because hearing you tell that story of how close both of those different 88 shells were, it reminded me of a verse in the Bible that says, 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. That's Psalm 91:7. And it sounds like that's kind of what you experienced out there.
Yes. Something was, somebody was protecting me. And even although those pieces of steel hit me, they didn't, they done damage, yes. It does, because of welt, you know, the impact of it, you know, the bruise. But never broke skin, because I never got a Purple Heart.
Right. Does that bother you that you didn't get a Purple Heart?
Well, at the time, I didn't even think about a Purple Heart. No.
Be honest with me here. When something like that happens, are you scared? Are you frightened? Does it take your breath away? How would you describe that feeling you get when those shells are coming in and all you can do is try to get in that hole and hide?
Well, at the time, you're so busy trying to see where you can. You wish the ground would open and you would crawl into it. Especially when those shells come, those barrages of artillery come upon you, and they're landing pretty close. It hurts. I know I got hit right on the inside. The foot here, the piece of shrapnel cut the outside boot, but it only scratched a little bit of skin, no blood, so I didn't get no Purple Heart.
You're still building the case that somebody's looking out for you, though, I'll tell you that. When the Battle of the Bulge came to an end, was that a relief to you after everything you'd been through there?
You know, come to think of it, I never did think nothing about it. Because as an infantry soldier, even although the Battle of the Bulge had ended, we were still pushing on forward. We were still battling the Nazis. Yeah. See, so we were still fighting, and the danger was still there. The danger was still there. So, I mean, I don't remember thinking anything, you know, really, you might say, out of the ordinary.
Well, what about a different time a few months later? Because we just marked the anniversary this last week, the 68th anniversary of VE Day on May 8th, when Germany surrendered. I'm sure you heard about that. What did that mean to you?
When the war ended, you know, shooting stopped and everything, it was a relief. And then all we had to do was wait and see what's going to happen.
So you were afraid you might have to go to Japan.
Well, that was another thought, yeah. Yes. But being in, you know, still in Europe, we never thought about the war in Japan.
I know you had your close calls and survived, but being a frontline infantry soldier, I have to imagine that you saw some of your buddies not get to come home. Do you still think about guys you knew that died over there?
I left a lot of buddies. A lot of buddies. I left them behind. A lot of wounded ones, a lot of ones that never came back. Yes, you know, when you're in battle, you're going to battle, or you attack, you're in battle, you go in battle, somebody's going to get hurt, and someone's going to get badly hurt. You're going to lose buddies. You don't think about it, and you're thinking about yourself also. It's after that it happens and all that, that's when it hurts. When, you know, you look around and, well, so-and-so's not here no more. I had buddies that, after a fight, a buddy of theirs was killed, and they went bananas. They lost their head, see? Well, that's for some. I mean, not many. But we had one or two that did go nuts, see? The killing, you know, the shooting, the losing of, about, especially if you grow very close to somebody. I had a buddy that was very close to me. He always joked with me and played around. He was a little short guy, and he was from one of the Virginias. He got hit in the town of Durham. He got two pieces of steel down through his neck up here and down to the spine there. So I had to leave him behind. When he got hit, and then we had to take off, I was taking off, and the guy was following me. He was wounded, but he was hollering. He used to call me, "Pancho, Pancho, I'm hit. And, well, I couldn't help him. So I stopped and I told him, I said, "You're going to have to stay. You're wounded. You cannot go. You cannot follow me. You're going to have to stay. You'll be okay. The medics will take care of you." And, "No, but I want to go with you." I said, "No, you're hurt. So you stay." So he stayed. And I didn't see him until after the war ended. I got to see him again. So we were buddies till after the war ended. So we both came back.
Thank goodness for that. Do you ever think about those guys that died over there and maybe what they would have done with their lives had they gotten to come home the way you did?
Well, I don't think that much of them, but I do think, you know, some guys, you know, are they still living? Or if they're living, where are they? What are they doing?
And what about you? When you came home, had it changed you being in the war, everything that you experienced? Did that give you a new perspective on life? Did it make you grow up in a hurry? What do you think the impact was on you?
You know, I never did think much about it. I lazed around for a while until I was free of the war, and I just resolved to go back to work.
You know, you talked about knowing guys that they couldn't handle what happened and they went nuts. I've talked to a lot of guys, maybe it wasn't that extreme, but they dealt with flashbacks for years and years, waking up in the middle of the night feeling like they were back in combat again. Did you ever experience anything like that?
Well, how would I say it? I mean, I was not the one that complained about that. I wasn't the one that really said things, but our friends that used to live, you know, close by, and my sisters and my brothers, sometimes, you know, they tell me the next day, "Hey, Tony, what's the matter with you? You were crying last night. You were yelling." And, well, of course, that was a flashback. But in the war, when I was fighting, I did not cry. I never had that feeling of crying. I was told, you know, that we would attack and attack and attack and all that. And it never, you know, really fazed me. I took orders. My dad taught me that. He used to tell me before I went to the Army. He says, "Tony, looks at things, you're getting of age, you might have to go to war. And it's going to be hard." When he was from Mexico, and he had, you know, been where the revolution was, you know, back in the old days in Mexico. And he would tell me, "It's going to be rough, it's going to be hard, but you're strong." And I made it through.
You did, and I want to thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us about it. What would you say that all these years later, what are you most proud of as a World War II veteran? What gives you the most pride, having been a part of what happened then?
Well, my pride is I haven't gone, fought a war, and coming back. Even though, like I said, yes, I got hit. Like I said, I got hit in the back. I got hit down on my feet, but not wounded. She never drew blood. Back then, I guess, yes, I had nightmares. I guess I wasn't the only one. So
when you think about all your kids and your grandkids, great-grandkids, what do you think they ought to know about you and all the guys you served with?
I have a picture there at home with my combat badge, my ribbons, and all that. I got it on the wall, and they see it and all that, and they know who I am, who I was.
Well, who he is and who he was is a brave American and a hometown hero in Kerman. Tony Armendariz Sr., 86 years old, served with the 8th Infantry Division in Europe, including the Battle of the Bulge. We're almost out of time on the program today, but tomorrow is Mother's Day. I know you're ahead of the game, and you've got it all planned out, how to take care of Mom tomorrow. My girls and I are going to try our best to spoil my wife. But I thought I'd close today by thanking my mom. She spent a couple years in uniform as an Army nurse, but I think more importantly for me, she's the one who more than anyone else helped me understand the ideals of America, those values that our country was founded upon, and those principles that our men and women in uniform have fought and died for. And of course, they continue to do that today. Our veterans are maybe the best constant example of the power of selfless sacrifice, putting the lives of others ahead of our own. And you know what? My mother has always provided a tremendous example in that regard as well. So thanks, Mom. Happy Mother's Day. The rest of you, I'll be back with another installment next Saturday, and I promise to keep you in the loop as Central Valley Honor Flight continues to develop. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today on KMJ.